Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. It's 10:05 in the morning.
I watered it down.
Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl.
And I'm Molly Wood, and welcome to a bonus mini-ish episode of Make Me Smart, where we are just... I'm saying mini-ish because
yes,
it's a complicated topic, and there are drinks involved, so it could go a little long.
Look,
but
dude, I got 24 minutes on my next thing, so that's how mini-ish this can be, all right?
Oh, all right.
Just
now
saying.
We know.
Now we know.
I love a deadline.
It's great to set parameters. So look, this is the special GDPR episode. Around these parts are calling it the GDPARTY episode, the GD party episode. Get it? Because tomorrow, May the 25th, is when GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, goes into effect over in Europe. Enforcement takes effect. So we're going to talk about that a little bit.
We are. It is the day we have all been waiting for. Companies all around there. You have gotten 1 to 1 million privacy updates from various people, and the results are all over the place, from Microsoft saying everybody gets GDPR treatment, no matter where they are, to NPR saying, oh, we got one privacy policy for the EU and one for the US. And the US one says, if you don't like what you're doing with your data, then don't use it, NPR.
thank you very much for coming, but please keep on listening.
Literally what it says. I fail to see how that is a choice, but okay.
Yeah.
Many people and many companies and many lawyers have been working for months on and on this, including our guests today.
Our guests today, Callie Schroeder and Austin Chambers, attorneys who specialize in data and privacy and intellectual property. They're in Colorado. The law firm is Lewis, Best, Williams, and Weiss, PC. What is that? Public counselors? Privy counselors? I don't even know. And they have been oh so hip deep in getting their clients ready for GDPR, which is why we got them on the phone.
That's right. They are going to more than...
Oh, look, Callie's jumping in already. They're like... No,
I know.
No,
they're
we're
right
not,
there.
We're not sitting here for nothing.
All I know. Right. They're like, yes, let's do this.
Sorry,
because we
wait.
Have got to get back to advising so many people. They're going to graciously give us a little time to first talk about cocktails and also answer some of your questions about all of this GDPR situation. But we should say that even though they're lawyers, I think this would be reasonable. This is not to be considered legal advice.
Yeah.
It is just an exercise in all of us getting smarter together. So one more time, welcome, Callie and Austin.
Hello.
There we go. All right. So look, I guess the first thing I want to know is, you know, for most of the general public, and frankly, even for me, I'm sure Molly's been thinking about this for a while, but it's only been like a couple of months I've been thinking about GDPR. How long have y'all been working on this problem?
Oof. Well, I had a year-long privacy fellowship with the International Association of Privacy Professionals the year before I started at this law firm. So I have been doing nothing but GDPR since, let's see, it's been almost 2 years now.
Wow, seriously?
Yeah.
How do you get out of bed in the morning?
It's all details and terrible, terrible jokes.
Yes, which we're going to get to in a minute, and I'm very excited about that. But as we sort of hit at least the enforcement deadline, I guess, tomorrow, what's keeping you or the companies that you're working with up at night?
There's another oof. Holy
cow. So many things. I know.
It's not terrible. We've been finalizing things like privacy policies in terms of use. We've been making sure that vendor contracts are working. And a lot of it has just been talking with clients and making sure they understand what their responsibilities are, and figuring out where the information they collect is and who it goes to and all of that. So a lot of it's kind of been data hygiene for the past several months. But yeah, right now it's kind of finalizing a whole bunch of projects that have been in the works for a few months and just getting them wrapped up.
Austin, is this a thing where at midnight on Friday, you know, Central European time or whatever the heck it is, this all just clicks into place and everybody's got to be compliant? Or is there a buffer in which companies can say, we need another 3 days because it's too hard?
Yeah, and it's an interesting question. Really, the GDPR was passed a couple years ago, and so this has been – they gave you a grace period, and that grace period I think was about 25 months. But in truth, the way that they've looked at it is that not everybody's going to be ready. Nobody's ready. The regulators themselves aren't even ready. And so I think that, you know, at the stroke of midnight, nothing's really going to change. Everybody's going to keep moving on. But there is – there's just the new risks of people actually coming out and kind of demanding their new rights that are – that do come into force as of midnight.
Well, yeah, that's what we were speculating earlier in the week on whether this meant that on Monday, you know, enforcement letters were going to start rolling out. Or, I mean, it seems, I wish it seemed likely, but it seems somewhat unlikely that consumers en masse are going to come out and be like, great, delete my data.
I bet you there's going to be a zillion consumers who come out. And because, right, how big is the European Union? 450 million people, something like that? There will be no small percentage of them in the 6 or 7 digit number that says, I want my rights right the heck now.
Right now. Yeah. Yeah, probably. What does that look like? How
I
do they do that?
I hear lawyers on the phone chuckling. What do you think? Is that what's going to happen?
I think it may happen for the big companies especially. I mean, people pay a lot of attention to companies like Facebook's in the news a lot right now, or Google, or, you know, the massive kind of big headline companies, I think, probably will get a whole bunch of requests pretty quickly. For a lot of our kind of mid-level clients, it may take a little longer. They're likely to get far fewer requests. But yeah, I think the testing period, especially for privacy conscious EU data subjects, you know, they're going to want to test them out. It's going to be interesting to see how quickly that happens.
Okay, interesting phrase there, EU data subjects. Most of the people, well, who knows? We perhaps have a global audience. But my guess would be most of the people who listen to this podcast are not EU data subjects. So if I'm a Facebook user in Ottumwa, Iowa, am I going to have rights? I mean, Zuckerberg promised they were going to be compliant. What's the deal?
So they may, but in the U.S. it kind of depends on whether or not the company is determined that they're going to apply those rights universally to all of their customers. I think for many of our clients, they've decided to go that route simply because it's easier to just treat everyone equally. It's good optics. It's, you know, easier to comply with internally. You don't have to run multiple systems. But pretty much unless you live in the EU and are an EU resident, GDPR doesn't really provide a lot of direct protection for you.
Seems like that's an important point.
It is. But so in the case of Microsoft, I mean, I think a lot of privacy advocates have hoped that most companies would take that approach, would sort of harmonize their privacy policies for everybody everywhere, so that, for example, if Microsoft says we're offering these protections to everyone, then in theory I could go to them and say, great, take out all that embarrassing data you collected when I was using Hotmail. Hypothetically.
Yeah, it's been interesting. The approach has been really broad with companies, and I've been, with the help of several of my privacy friends, kind of tracking how people are reacting, and the approaches tend to be either they're super transparent and they come right out and say, hey, we're changing all this stuff and we're changing it because GDPR is a thing and it's coming, or they go a little more a little more circumspect and they're like, hey, for no particular reason, here's a brand new privacy policy and also a brand new terms of use. And no, don't ask why, it's fine. And then the final option is the companies that apparently have gone full panic mode and are just announcing, so we're just not giving any of this to the EU anymore. You guys don't get services anymore.
How is that tenable? That's like a zillion people over there.
That's what I would think, too. But I imagine for most of those companies, it's a circumstance where it's just an extremely low percentage of their customer base is EU, and you know, they're US-based companies, and it's not a huge hit on their bottom line. But there's been one or two. Like, there was an online gaming company that said they weren't offering the program to the EU anymore, and I think EU users were like half of their customer base. So I don't know why they panicked that hard. But ultimately, I think it's a good thing. And at the very least, it's been, I think, a very good and healthy thing for companies to have to take a hard look at what information is it that we collect on people, and do we need all of that, and who do we give it to, and where does it go? So I think all of it's been a healthy, if kind of headachy, process.
Yeah, I bet. All right, so Molly, you talked about drinks. Go.
Let's talk about a cure for all that, all those headaches, because I'm not going to lie, despite being outstanding experts in your field, the primary reason that you're on is because we found all of your amazing, punny GDPR drink names on Twitter, and I was hoping that you could read that list of drink names for us.
Yeah, this started with a joke about how we were going to take care of ourselves while trying to deal with the GDPR, and apparently we are classic lawyers in that alcohol was the first idea we had.
Nice.
So yeah, so I tend to be the provider of I tend to be the provider of terrible, terrible pun names. But my cocktails are extremely simple. They tend to be like the DP old fashioned. I'm very basic that way. I've got GDPR garitas and
GDPR garitas. Let's see. I like that.
A Scanhattan was one of them. And I think at one point, because I was annoyed with blockchain discussions, I decided we were going to make a mockchain mocktail for people.
Is mockchain in the GDPR thing? Is blockchain in the GDPR thing? Please tell me
not. It's not. All people right. are discussing God. It in context of GDPR, because the way blockchain functions, it keeps records of data. Yeah, so if someone asks you to delete data, you might not be able to. So yeah, there's questions about it, but it's not highly involved. Austin has taken a different approach where he makes actually beautiful looking, very complex cocktails in response to this, and then shares them with us on Twitter, which is great.
Perfect. All right. And so Molly, again,
yeah, there's
got?
the full compliance, I think, was one of yours, which I loved. And then anyway, we should say that
I'm
part of this happened
fan.
Because
I was in that.
Yeah. I love that. Full compliance. This also happened because I was talking about GDPR so much on the show that it ended up someone made the joke that it should be a drinking game. And that caused our listener, John, at Zeus Trone, to tweet a recipe, the GDPR, a.k.a. the right to be forgotten, which was 5 ounces of bourbon, ice optional, served in an opaque glass or soda can to protect the drinker's privacy. And then he tweeted us another one, which with a much more serious-looking recipe, closer to an old-fashioned, which will be our official GDPR drink called the Double Opt-In. You have to
twice. So you have to order it twice. Get it? So here's what we did. We actually, and yes, let me say this again. It's 10:15 in the morning where we are right now, me and Molly. But we got Phoebe Underman in the studio. And she's going to make us a drink and walk us through it. And I'm probably going to have a sip, although I don't know. It is 10 o'clock in the morning and live radio is my future, so I may not.
Don't judge me, bud.
Is that you? No, get out. Seriously? Oh, my God.
I'm having a good old-fashioned GDPR.
Oh, my God. All right. So the double opt-in. Here's Phoebe Underman, and hopefully we can hear her on these mics. Charlton, can we turn those on? They on?
Hello.
All right. Go.
So I'm here to make this double opt-in.
You need some lights? I tend to run a dark studio. You need some lights?
I'm good. I'm going to put some ice in my shaker here.
Oh, my God.
And, so this is a bourbon cocktail, but with some twists, because this John, our listener, decided to throw some absinthe in the recipe.
Wow. All right, let me just tell you, Phoebe's got a heavy pour. I'm just saying. I'm looking at this thing. Phoebe's got a heavy pour. So it looks like a couple of jiggers full of bourbon.
Right, and right? So we couldn't actually get the absinthe, which I wanted to
I actually have absinthe
at
my house.
At your
Nobody
desk?
Told me. No, not at my desk.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So we wanted to have some absinthe, which I thought would add, you know, help with the liberatory vibe of this cocktail.
What are we using instead?
But instead, we're going to stick with something classically European with some ouzo.
Oh, wow.
Just a dash.
Whoa.
Just a dash. Ooh, she's got a heavy pour.
You really are a GDPR tender.
GDPR. Oh, yeah. Were you waiting on getting that one in? I skipped it because I was like, I'm not doing that.
Oh, no. I was like, I'm doing that.
We're doing a little bit of bitters
here. I want to add some bitters just, you know, to keep these lawyers and people who are talking about GDR sort of healthy.
Okay.
You know, it's good for your digestion.
Yes.
Very medicinal. So a couple dashes of that.
Do you have actual bartending experience?
I do.
Because you know what you're doing over there. I could not do this. She's got a fluency and a fluidity with her motions.
Public radio doesn't pay the bills for me. So, and then I'm just going to give it a quick shake.
Okay.
And strained over ice.
I'd love to be a bartender.
Let's see, I'm going to peel some lemon here. Yep. I want there to be a little flavor of something, you know, something that gives us a little hope here.
How are we doing so far?
Ah, yes, baby.
And,
yes.
I think it's important to bring up, you know, I'm going to make sure that I have your consent to serve you this cocktail.
Exactly right. There you go. And we now have it on record. You have my consent to make me this cocktail. Yes.
And here we go. Let's see how it turned out.
Yeah, let's see. I'm a little scared, let me just say.
I got to say, from the perspective of the person on the phone, this sounds amazing.
It does.
I bet.
Okay, I did a little sip for
Give me that teeny, give me the teeny
no,
tiny
that's for
sip.
Me.
Give,
that's
no,
for
no,
me.
No. You give me the teeny tiny. Oh, you're killing me.
That's pretty good.
It's okay. He only has a live show later. It's going to be fine.
That's right. All right, hang on. Let me give it a sniff here. Oh, yeah, I would take that. All right, hang on. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Cheers.
A couple of those would be good. Cheers. But not
Cheers.
At 10:30 in the morning. Oh, man. Well, Molly, you know, here's mud in your eye from, you know, Oakland to L.A., as it were.
You too, boss.
All right. So that's it. We got listener questions coming up. Now, hopefully, we're all smart on GDPR. We're going to talk a little bit more about it. What? After this. All right, Phoebe's packing up, moving out of the studio. We're going to keep Callie and Austin on the line, I think.
Bye, Phoebe.
Yes, we do have some questions. Here's the first one. It's from John. He works in digital marketing for a small financial services firm, only using his first name here because we don't want him to be penalized in any way if he is not in compliance. He says he's been researching how GDPR compliance is going to affect smaller companies, and he says he discovered that meeting those requirements is a whole different game when your business only has a handful of employees. Here he is.
Study after study was saying that there are large multinational companies spending millions of dollars on compliance, right? So they'll have teams of lawyers addressing this and teams of developers and of marketing operations folks doing this, right? I'm a team of one here. I dabble in some technical aspects of digital marketing, but I'm not a developer. So for a small firm like us, it's often one person in each of those roles doing it, and maybe not the skill sets required to do some of this custom development.
So, Kelly and Austin, what do you tell your smaller clients? And by smaller, I mean like five-ish, probably. How worried should they be, and what should they do?
I think, for small clients, really it's just kind of taking it piece by piece and trying to find, something that's manageable, kind of break it up into bite-sized portions and really start with just, again, kind of assessing where your data is and taking a pragmatic approach to it, working on your privacy policy, and, again, just kind of understanding where things are at. And, maybe seeking out some cheap advice or kind of talking to a lawyer for a few hours. But I think that I think people kind of tend to look at GDPR and get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But really, there's some simple things you can do, and a lot of vendors are kind of building in sorts of features in their products, particularly with marketing, that kind of help you comply. Email marketing platforms, a lot of them are building in compliance tools built into their platforms that you can rely on to kind of help you comply. So I think that the main thing is just not to be scared, kind of, again, look at it pragmatically and work your way through it. And, I think everybody can get there.
All right, we're going to keep cruising through as many questions as we can get through. George McKee wrote us this one. The previous regime of European privacy regulations had a safe harbor provision that allowed U.S. companies to keep European data in the U.S. as long as they treated it according to the EU rules. This allowance was recently struck down by a European court. Does the GDPR have anything similar?
So Privacy Shield works with the GDPR. Privacy Shield is what was put in place to replace Safe Harbor after it was struck down. That deals specifically with transmitting data from the EU to the US and making sure that there's safety provisions in place there. That's just one part of the GDPR. The GDPR does cover data transfers and address data transfers, but it also addresses, you know, initial collection and storage and use and who you share it with. So it's not that there's a separate regime so much as the two will work together. So if you had Safe Harbor, Privacy Shield is a good idea. It's a good idea to get certified with that and make sure that you're covered for data transfers. The GDPR mentions Privacy Shield specifically as one way that you can properly transfer data to a non-EU country, but there's other measures. There's binding corporate clauses. There's other standards and agreement forms that you can use that are listed in the GDPR. So it's an option and it's incorporated with the law, but it's not mm-hmm. kind of by itself enough to be compliant with the GDPR. It's just one factor.
So what I'm hearing here, honestly, and I say this with no disrespect to lawyers, is that there's just a mess of ways you can get caught up in this thing and not even know it. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's messy, and there's a lot of pieces to it. And part of the challenge of it so far is that until there's enforcement, it's hard to know exactly how different enforcement bodies in the EU are going to interpret it, how strict they're going to be, whether they're willing to work with companies if they're doing reasonable efforts, or whether they're going to come down really hard. And no one wants to be the guinea pig case there. So
yeah, right. Because there's peril in that, right? That's because that's going to be the test case, and that's where it's all going to go. Start getting on the record, which makes a lot of sense. All right. So we had a guy by the name of Gilberto Fabrice on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. He wrote a lot of great questions about GDPR, questions like what happens when a European is out of Europe? Does GDPR apply to them? Today he has written a follow-up, which is kind of interesting. He wants to know whether a potential theme for discussion is, do we need to come up with some sort of internet equivalent of the World Trade Organization to oversee and maybe basically enforce these regulations? Here's what he says on tape.
Hi, Molly and Kai. It was great to hear comments on my question about GDPR. But hearing how complicated this whole implementation process can be made me wonder about the best way to tackle future internet regulation. So I think a potential theme for this discussion is, do we need to come up with some sort of internet equivalent of the World Trade Organization to oversee and enforce basic internet regulation? Thanks for your show.
I'm sure it's Gilberto, right? Because he's Brazilian. I'm totally sure that's how you pronounce his name.
Look at you.
I'm just saying.
Probably. Yeah, what do you think, guys? Global government? That'll go over well. Right? We can totally do that.
To some extent, people have already been trying that. There's this concept in law called data localization that's been in play since the internet became widespread, where different countries are trying to figure out, you know, how you enforce national borders on something that doesn't fall within borders,
right.
You know, it goes everywhere. And there really haven't been any satisfactory answers to that. There's been court cases. There have been issues where people shift servers to different companies or different countries to try and figure out jurisdiction. But yeah, there's not a global or universal understanding of what law applies to what data at what time. The GDPR is trying to do that, but the scope of the GDPR only covers information that is collected from Europe itself. It's a geographic scope. So in answer to his previous question, if a European citizen comes to the United States and, you know, gives a ticket vendor some information in person while in the United States, that doesn't fall under the GDPR. It's not based on your citizenship. It's based on where you physically are when the organization gets the information. Mm-hmm. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah. It's really complicated. It's tough to enforce. I wouldn't disagree with the idea of a global enforcement body. I just don't know how we'd structure that exactly.
Yeah.
Right. All right, guys, we could clearly do this all day, especially what with the good cocktails, but we're gonna have to call it for now. Clearly,
that.
There are going to be, I mean, how delightful is it to just get this little 10 a.m. treat? Anyway, we will have much more to say, I'm sure, about the GDPR in the days and months to come, especially, like you said, as the enforcement starts to come into effect and we see what kinds of precedents get set around that. So maybe you can come back and continue to make us smart. Thanks for coming on today. If you guys have follow-up questions, please email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. And of course, all of the usual things apply. Tell your friends about our awesome drinking podcast. Review us on Apple Podcasts. Tweet us.
That's what I should do. I should do a beer podcast.
You should totally do that.
I should totally do a beer podcast. I can't be the first one. Callie Schroeder and Austin Chambers, attorneys at law, but let's remember, consult your own attorneys, please, if you have legal questions about GDPR or, frankly, anything else. Thanks, you two, for coming on. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Make Me Smart, as you can hear by the music, it is that time of the broadcast. It's produced by Christopher Olin, Sharon Morris, senior producer Eve Tro. Special shout-out today to Phoebe Unterman. This week's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Theme music composed by Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez.
The executive director of On Demand is Satara Nieves, and the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. I kind of thought we might get the Slowpoke remix.
I don't know, man. I'm just a talent.
Like the drinking remix.
I'm just a talent. I'm going to have one more sip, and then I'm going to put this puppy down.
Me too.
That's nice. Would have been better with... although I see the Uzo substitution for absinthe. Is Phoebe still around? Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, wait. Gotta go. Bye.
Bye.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.